The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Welcome to Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB. Eric Getzoff here, taking you up until 10 p.m. Brian Graves behind the glass, our engineer. We got a good show coming to you. We got Christy Ackert from the New York Daily News to call in to talk about the New York Mets and about the MLB postseason, which has just been fantastic so far. The Baltimore Orioles actually just advanced about an hour ago to the ALCS, sweeping the Detroit Tigers. They won 2-1 tonight. We got a very good show for you also. Chris Herring from the Wall Street Journal will be calling in to talk about the New York Knicks. The show is sponsored by Low Partners Realty, which is a full-service real estate firm that performs asset management, property management, leasing, financing, and construction management services in real estate. Find them on the web at lowpartnersrealty.com. This is actually my first show, and I'm glad to be with you. I'm from Plainview, graduated from Temple University. Media studies and production degree, been doing sports talk for a while now, really enjoy it, glad to be with you. Background about my sports history, diehard New York Met fan, unfortunately right now, but hopefully the future is getting a lot brighter for the Mets. They got those young arms, so hopefully it's getting better. Big New York Knicks fan and New York Giant fan as well. So we'll start off with the NFL. We're going to have Christy Ackert in a couple of minutes to talk about the Mets. But the NFL, I mean, today with the New York Giants, great game by the Giants. The first half was a little bit iffy. The Giants shot themselves in the foot a little bit. Two fumbles, one by Preston Parker, another by Quinton Demps. But the second half of the game, I mean, they looked amazing. They outscored the Falcons 20-7, but it felt like they outscored the Falcons 30-0 the way they dominated that game. Matt Ryan really had no time in the pocket later in the game. Jason Pierre-Paul, the entire New York Giants pass rush was all over Matt Ryan. He had no time to pass. The secondary was iffy to start, but throughout the entire game, they really found their way. They were able to shut down Roddy White, only 2 receptions for 26 yards. The run game didn't do anything in the second half, so credit the Giants tremendously for that. They're now 3-2, 3 straight wins for Big Blue. Next week, they go into Philadelphia on Sunday Night Football, and let me tell you something, folks. This game can be for first place, assuming the Cowboys lose in Seattle next week, which I don't want to say anything's a given because nothing's a given, especially in sports. You could see crazy things such as New England winning 14-0 against Cincinnati tonight. No one expected that, but you see crazy things. Dallas could go into Seattle and win. However, if they lose, which I think they should and they probably will, then the Giants-Eagle game Sunday Night Football will be for first place. So the Giants, after starting off 0-2, and everyone questioning the coaching staff, questioning the offense, the offensive coordinator, now they're possibly looking at first place. And I know it doesn't mean anything. It's only week 6. But it's good for the Giants. It's good for their morale. It's good for their psychological standpoint because from where they were last year at 0-6, no one really thought that they would be a good team this year. No one thought that they could possibly, especially after that Detroit Lions game where they looked brutal, no one thought that they would win 3 games in a row, yet alone maybe a 4th next week in Philadelphia. So Giants looking good. The run game is good too as well. I mean, Andre Williams was really just battling defenders over. 20 carries for 65 yards. Rashad Jennings ended up leaving the game because he got injured, but Rashad Jennings was good too. 10 carries for 55 yards. And the thing I like about this New York Giant offense that this offense really didn't have last year, what is the running backs being able to catch passes out of the backfield. Last year, Brandon Jacobs wasn't able to do so. Peyton Hillis, they didn't have those type of running backs, and they didn't have the type of offense that allowed the running backs to do so. Now they do. I mean, Rashad Jennings is catching balls out of the backfield. So was Andre Williams, and I understand both of them each had 2 receptions today, so a total of 4, but they have had more, especially in the Houston Texan game in week 3. But the key to that is that it's a change of pace on offense, because the defense really, you know, you're really not expecting that on defense, and if you have running backs who can catch balls out of the backfield, that really opens up space for the wide receivers down the field, and even some short passes, some button hooks, some go routes, some slants. It really opens up the field. So, yeah, I like this offense. It's quick. It has movement. the good thing with Eli Manning is that he makes decisions really quick. He gets the ball out of his hands like that. And it's good because the offensive line, though they have been pretty good recently, they're not the best offensive line in football, let's put it that way. Eli Manning is getting rid of the ball quicker than ever, especially this year so far. Preston Parker's come out of nowhere as well. The receiving corps has been phenomenal this year. I mean, Randall, though he has had some drops, he's looked good. Victor Cruz has looked great as well. Now they got Odell Beckham Jr. back, and today, I mean, 4 receptions, 44 yards, the game-winning touchdown. And they're going to have this kid for the next 4 years. They're number 12 overall in the draft this year, their first draft pick of this past draft. So, listen, folks, the Giants receivers, don't be worried about them. They have threats. People thought they didn't have threats on offense. They do. Rashad Jennings, this kid's good. He ended up leaving the game, unfortunately. I think it was an arm injury or a leg injury, but I was reading online. He'll be fine. There's nothing to worry about. He said that he's feeling okay and that he should be all right and good to go. So no threat on that. So the Giants look good, the Jets, unfortunately, but now we have on the line Chris the Acker, New York Daily News covers the Mets. Chris the Eric gets off Sports Talk 1240. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for coming on. So, unfortunately, the Mets are not in the playoffs. Hadn't been since 06, but these MLB playoffs have been tremendous so far. I mean, 18 innings, walk-off hits, it's been great.
Yeah, they've been pretty exciting so far.
Yeah, it's been phenomenal. And then, so we get on to the Mets. David Wright, worst season by far, 8 home runs, gets injured, only 58 RBIs, power's clearly an issue. Is this something that he needs to worry about for next season and beyond?
Actually, I think they were pretty relieved when they got the diagnosis that he was having trouble with his shoulder, that it was, I think it was a lot more serious than they ever let on. The shoulder was slipping, and it was clearly affecting his play. There are signs that they think his power will come back next year when he's healthy. So they're putting a lot of faith in that. But he is getting older, so, you know, there are those worries that you could take into next year. I don't know that he's going to decline that quickly, though.
Yeah, I don't think either. I don't hope so, and I know Mets fans don't either. Hitting coach Dave Hudgens, he won't be returning to the Mets next season, as we heard this week. Obviously not a big deal. It's all about the batters, what they do at the plate. But do the Mets have a hitting coach in mind?
I think they had a few that they would like to have, but they haven't been able to put it together yet. Dave was actually fired in May, and they had Lamar Johnson
that
in there as the interim
hitting
coach for a while. They definitely need to, you know, produce more runs. I'm not sure that's the hitting coach's, you know, fault.
Right.
They need to get another bat, and they need to, you know, they need to have better at bats from David Wright, who hopefully when he's healthy will get them, and Curtis Granderson. So, I think that's on the back burner. I don't think you'll hear about that for a few weeks, actually.
People are saying Matt Harvey's back next year, but he is coming off of Tommy John surgery. So next season, do you think we should expect the Mets brass to take a similar route with Harvey, like the Nationals took with Strasburg in 2012, such as limiting his innings at the end of the season, or are they just going to let him pitch?
I think they won't be as dramatic. If they are a playoff team or a playoff contender, I think they will. I mean, they've already talked about having rest periods in the middle of the season for starters next year. I think they'll be very careful with Matt Harvey, and I think from what we've seen this year, Matt Harvey will push them as far as he can go. So I think they will go in with a plan of how to make sure they don't have to shut him down at the end of the season, because I think that would be, I think he would be very upset about that. I think it would be a kind of a disaster, actually.
Chris the Acker for the New York Daily News on Sports Talk 1240. Travis d'Arnaud this year came alive tremendously after being recalled from AAA in June. But I thought that he had a lot of noticeable issues behind the plate blocking pitches. He was tied for the NL lead with 12 pass balls, and he missed about a third of the season. How will the Mets take action to improve on his defensive miscues? Is he going to play in Winter League ball?
No, he's not. And he's shut down right now. He had surgery last Wednesday for a bone chip in his elbow. He's shut down for 6 to 8 weeks. and then he'll begin his normal off season. Actually, his pass balls, he cut down on the pass balls towards the end of the season. He was making some noticeable progress. There were some big blocks he had towards the end of the year. Bob Guerin was noticing a marked improvement in his blocking of the ball towards the end of the season. He had a lot on his plate this year. When he started out and he was hitting 180, it was affecting, I believe, all parts of his game. He went down to AAA, focused on the offense, came back, was a little bit not as great behind the plate as he was before. And I think it's a balance thing for him. He got a little better in the blocking of the ball. They want him to work on his throwing. He talked about it. He's going to put a lot of effort into working on that in the offseason. So we'll see where we're at in spring training, I think. I think they're very happy with Travis right now.
Yeah, and I think Travis has a lot of potential as well. Dilson Herrera brought up from AA in August, another young player in the Mets system. If Daniel Murphy is not the second baseman next season, well, I forget about Murphy. Do you think Dilson Herrera is ready to assume a long-term position at second base? Is he ready?
He looked overmatched at times, but it's very hard to tell, I think, in September. It's the longest he's ever played. He's 20 years old. He had never played into September professionally before. So it's hard to say if he's ready or not. I know Sandy Alderson told me in August, if there's a need at second base, he is a viable option at second base. I also think Wilmer Flores is a viable option at second base. He clearly looks more comfortable there. You know, he's got a bat that is coming alive in the major leagues. So, I mean, they do have options at second base if Daniel Murphy is traded this offseason.
And for Daniel Murphy, he is eligible for arbitration this offseason, and then after the 2015 season, he's eligible for free agency. Are the Mets thinking of possibly locking him up long-term? Do you know what the Mets' plans are for Murphy?
I think they've shown a willingness to shop him around in the past. I think his arbitration would probably put him in the $9 million range for next year. For a team with not a lot of payroll flexibility, that's a lot of money for a defensively flawed player.
It is.
I think since they have shown a willingness to shop him in the offseason, I think they'll be looking to see what they can get for him. I don't see them locking him up long-term, no.
We talk about Terry Collins now, lame duck manager heading into next season. In my opinion, very rarely has a lame duck manager proven to be a successful formula in sports. Do you feel that that could be a problem heading into the season?
I think he needs to win out of the gate, yeah. I don't think it'll be a problem. He's never lost the clubhouse, so that's not going to be a problem at all. The one thing I've always seen in that clubhouse, they have his back. David Wright has his back. Matt Harvey has his back. Curtis Granderson has his back. So he's not lost the clubhouse, so that won't be an issue, but he does need to win.
So if, let's say, he doesn't start off too hot out of the gate, do you think the Mets are going to have a short leash on him next season?
They could. They could. The question is if they have a replacement in mind.
Right.
And right now I don't see a viable replacement.
Matt Van Decker settled into left field in the second half of the season, but a lot of people didn't think he performed the way that the Mets had hoped he would. From what you've seen covering the Mets, do you think that Van Decker is capable of being an everyday player at the big league level?
I haven't seen that from him yet. I would like to see a bigger bat over there. I think when they changed his swing, they shortened his swing, took away a lot of power from him. So you're not going to get power out of that position from him. The thing about Matt Van Decker that's always been true, though, is whenever he's jumped a level, whenever he's been promoted from, say, AA to AAA, it's the first part of the season that he's been promoted, he struggled, and then he's adjusted, and then you saw the power.
Uh-huh.
So it's almost worth seeing what he does in spring training. But I do think they need to bring in a bigger bat in left field.
Yeah, I agree, but if they bring in a shortstop that has power, such as Starlin Castro or J.J. Hardy, I think Den Dekker might be an option at left field. From what I've seen from him, no, he doesn't have the power. But contact-wise, he does make contact, and he hits the ball. He may add a lot, but as you just said, you just got to be patient with him. So if the Mets do bring in a shortstop, Den Dekker can play left field to start the season, correct?
Yes.
Uh-huh. That's what I thought. All right, trades for this offseason. Clearly the Mets' lack of production is at shortstop or outfield. In your opinion, which one of these positions do you think that the Mets need to address the most?
I think left field, but only because I think that's where they're looking. You hear them talk about Wilmer Flores at shortstop, Matt Reynolds at shortstop. It indicates to me that they're looking for something in the outfield. Unless I can pull off a trade for a Starlin Castro, I would say left field to me would be where they would be going.
And I've also heard rumors that the Mets are not willing to par with their young pitchers, such as Noah Syndergaard, Zach Wheeler. I hope not Jacob deGrom or Matt Harvey. But if the Mets do want to make a trade for Starlin Castro, they know that they're going to have to give up those players. Are they willing to give up those players for a big bat, such as Starlin Castro, or someone else?
There are a lot of young arms in that system. There are some that are untouchable. I would say Matt Harvey's untouchable. I would say right now DeGrom is untouchable. Wheeler is closer to untouchable. I know Syndergaard was untouchable in the past. That might be a little different now. I mean, I don't think they're going to trade Noah Syndergaard, but they might listen. A Montero might be tradable. There's Henry Mejia might be tradable.
Mm-hmm.
There are some young arms. They have plenty of young arms that they could move that aren't necessarily the marquee names. They may include one if they can get a deal for a Castro or something like that, yes.
And you mentioned Henry Mejia. He was a closer this year. I mean, a lot of saves. I think he had in the high 20s. But did he do enough this year to retain that role in 2015? Or do you think possibly familiar Bobby Parnell can challenge Mejia as the closer next year?
He had 28 saves. He had a good first season as a closer. There are people within the organization that have always believed that Jerry Familia would eventually be the closer of the future for this team. I think he goes into spring training, and he, Parnell, and Mejia are going to be competing for that job, and rightfully so. Familia has earned a place in that competition. Bobby Parnell pitched well until he was hurt, so they all deserve to compete for it, definitely.
Obviously, the Mets' payroll issues are an issue, but going into this offseason, how much payroll flexibility do you think that the Mets have this offseason?
I don't know. Honestly, they have repeated again and again that they will have the flexibility to go out and change the team. Jeff LaPlante said that when he extended Sandy Alderson. Sandy Alderson said he did not think he'd be constrained by the payroll. I need to see it first.
Yeah, and a lot of us Mets fans are wondering when they're going to spend that money. But as long as the productivity comes, I'm okay with laying off and then signing Matt Harvey and all the other guys to maybe long-term contracts. So do you maybe think that that's a reason why they're not spending, because they want to re-up on some of these young guys and they know that they're going to have to spend money that way?
That may be part of it. I think there's other factors, too. I mean, clearly there have not been fans. You know, they haven't been getting people to the park. They have just last year got rid of some long-term big contracts. They did try to go out and sign some players last year, but at the same time, they didn't find that they were in the neighborhood of the market they wanted. We'll just have to see. It could be part of that, but I think they need to spend if they're going to get to the point where they can re-sign these players.
You mentioned Bobby Parnell coming back next year. You feel that he deserves a role back in the bullpen, but in my opinion, I just feel like there's a lot of right-handers in the bullpen already, hard-throwing also, such as Mejia, Familia, and Vic Black as well. Is Bobby Parnell guaranteed a role, do you think, in the bullpen in 2015?
It'll be his to lose. He has a spot in that bullpen. unless he can't perform.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, we'll let you go in a second. Once again, Christy Ackard from the New York Daily News covers the Mets. Young players, Noah Syndergaard, Kevin Plawecki, Steven Matz, Matt Reynolds, as you previously mentioned, none of these guys have seen action in the major leagues. In 2015, when do you think, or do you think any of these guys will come to the Mets and play on the Mets in 2015?
Yes, I think you'll see, I think Matz is very close. Noah will, I think Syndergaard will be up in 2015. There's a chance you'll see, I think, if Plawecki is still with the organization, you'll see him towards the end of the year, and perhaps Reynolds. You could see all of them.
All right. Thank you once again. Christy Ackard from the New York Daily News covers the Mets with Eric Yetzoff on Sports Talk 1240. Christy, thank you very much.
Thank you. Good night.
All right, good night. All right, once again, Christy Ackard from the New York Daily News giving us the inside scoop on the New York Mets. Listen, 79-83 this year. No, they didn't crack 500. No, they were not in the playoff race. No, they didn't even collapse in September, which at this point I kind of would take rather than a 79-83 season. But it was an upgrade over last season and the previous seasons where they finished 74-88. So, listen, as a Met fan, you got to look at the positives. Unfortunately, that's where we are right now, and that's a positive. There was a lot to look forward to. There was a lot to be proud of as a Met fan this year and look forward to next year. Jacob deGrom, I think this kid's going to win Rookie of the Year, and he deserves it as well. You talk about Lucas Duda as well, 30 home runs from him. And it's he had 30, but he had two in the last two games to bump himself up to 30, and he had some big home runs as well. I got to admit, in the beginning of the season, he was not good to start the year in the clutch, but towards the end of the season, post-All-Star break, he delivered in the clutch. He had that home run in Milwaukee that ended up tying the game. I'm sorry, giving the Mets the lead in the top of the ninth inning against Francisco Rodriguez, which I'm sure a lot of you Met fans really enjoyed, just getting K-Rod the loss and winning that game in Milwaukee against them. And he had a bunch of other clutch home runs as well throughout the season. So 30 home runs by him. There was a lot of bright spots. And look, as Christy just mentioned, a bright spot is the young pitching. I mean, Matt Harvey, kid's going to be a stud. Hopefully he still is a stud after that Tommy John surgery. Jacob deGrom, who looked phenomenal this year. Zach Wheeler, who came through at the end of this season. I mean, he started off 3-8, and he didn't look good. But after that game against Oakland in June, where he only lasted two innings and allowed six earned runs, he was great. He finished 8-3 from that point on, a sub-3.5 ERA. He lowered his walks, increased his strikeouts, and he was good. So they got those three guys right there, and then you can always fill in a number four or number five pitcher, such as the Mets did by signing Bartolo Colon, and such as guys on the Mets right now, such as John Neese and Dylan G. So, listen, the Mets, are they in the best spot in MLB? No, but the light, I think, is approaching at the end of the tunnel. Is it there yet? No. It's not going to be there until the Mets get over 500, until the Mets are over 500 on September 1st. Then I'll say, listen, this is a different Mets team. But right now, it's not. But it's getting there once again, and that's what we got to look forward to. Hopefully 2015 is better than 2014. We're going to take a quick break here on WGBB Sports Talk 1240. When we come back, we'll continue our talk on the NFL. The Jets getting smoked in San Diego, and we'll talk about the New York Knickerbockers. We'll be right back.
Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB. Or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan. or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you could find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA, or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
Eric Getzoff back here on Sports Talk 1240 WGBB 1240 AM. Once again, this show is brought to you by Low Partners Realty, which is a full-service real estate firm that performs asset management, property management, leasing, financing, and construction management services in real estate. Find them on the web at lowpartnersrealty.com. 9:30 p.m., I'll take you up until 10 o'clock on this edition of Sports Talk 1240. We'll have Chris Herring from the Wall Street Journal to talk about the New York Knickerbockers. It's interesting with the Knicks because this is going to be a transition year, in my opinion. They go from two straight full seasons of Mike Woodson, and you had that half season at the end of 2011-2012. So you have the Mike Woodson era, and now you're transitioning over to, I guess you want to, whatever you want to call it. You want to call it the Derek Fisher era? It's fine. You want to call it the Phil Jackson era? It's fine. You want to call it the second era of Carmelo Anthony? That's fine with me, but the bottom line is that this is a different era, and it's going to be a different team with a different system, which is the triangle. And it's going to be interesting to see how this team really engulfs the triangle and how this team, how they do with the triangle. Because the triangle system, you need the personnel. You need people with high basketball IQ. And I mean, from watching the Knicks the past couple of years, I don't know if the Knicks are a team that has a high basketball IQ. I mean, I've seen a couple disastrous plays from the Knicks in the past couple of years. Look, Derek Fisher's coming in. Him and Phil Jackson are changing the entire culture of the Knicks, on the court and off the court. It's going to be a whole lot different. It's going to be a different year. I'm going to ask Chris Herring about that. He's going to be coming on our show at about 9:45. He does a phenomenal job. Definitely give him a follow on Twitter, at Chris Herring, WSJ, Wall Street Journal. Does a great job covering the Knicks. And look, it's October. Knicks season starts at the end of this month. Get ready. Get ready, especially if you're a Jet fan, because today was a disaster. 31-0. I'm a Met fan, and I'm just happy that I'm not a Jet fan. I'm a Giant fan, because if I was a Jet fan and a Met fan, my head would be exploding every single season. In Jet season, I would be looking forward to the spring. During Mets season, I would be looking forward to the fall, and it would just be a never-ending cycle. And I mean, the Jets today were just brutal. 31-0. Their quarterbacks, a total of 12 for 31, 60 yards. I mean, they average 1.8 yards per pass. Brutal. And look, Geno Smith was horrible. 4 for 12, 27 yards in the first half. But it wasn't his fault. I mean, his receivers were not making plays for him at all. Well, I mean, listen, when you have receivers like Jeremy Curley, Greg Salas, David Nelson, those are your receivers. Those are your go-to guys. I mean, come on, Aaron Rodgers or Peyton Manning aren't going to perform to their abilities with that receiving corps. So, yeah, Geno Smith did not play well, and he deserved to be pulled at the start of the third quarter. But, look, let's be honest, it's not totally Geno Smith's fault. Michael Vick came in the second half, 8 for 19, 47 yards. I mean, come on, give me a break. We all know that this isn't the Michael Vick of 2004 when he ruled the cover of Madden. Because everyone knows he used to play Madden. He tore it up in that video game, and he ran for yards. And I mean, the guy was unstoppable, and not just Madden, on the field as well. 04, he led the Atlanta Falcons to the NFC Championship game with really not a lot of people on that roster. They ended up losing to the Eagles in the NFC Championship game 27-10. But, I mean, Michael Vick in his prime is phenomenal, but he's not that Michael Vick anymore. Jets fans, you got to get that through your head. He's not. Unfortunately, there's no quarterback on the Jets right now who can win games. So I think the next question for the Jets is who starts next week at home against Denver. And unfortunately, doesn't really matter because is the Jets season over? They're 1-4. They just got blown out 31-0. And it's not just that, but the season has gotten progressively worse game after game after game after game. Versus Oakland, 19-14, they didn't look great. And then at Green Bay, the first half was great. Then it dwindled down in the second half. Versus Chicago, I thought they played better than the Bears, but they lost the game. Last week against the Lions, I mean, they played a whole lot better than the Jets. Geno Smith was not good. And then it all captivates today in San Diego. And I'm going to be honest, I thought that the Jets had a real chance in this game against San Diego. Because, look, three straight losses against the Jets. The Jets, to me, aren't a type of team that is the Browns or the Jaguars of the NFL where you know that they're just going to lose games. They're not that type of team. I thought that they were going to come in and at least make it interesting. But from the onset of the game, the Chargers just blew them out. I mean, come on. It's not like the Jets have not had success in San Diego as well. 2004, they won the playoff game in San Diego. 2009, in San Diego. But today, 31-0. And it wasn't just the offense, but the defense was bad as well. And how about the penalties? Oh, all facets of the game were terrible. 12 penalties for 94 yards for the Jets. The Chargers dominated the time of possession, basically 39 minutes to 21 minutes. Rex is going to have a lot of explaining to do this week at the press conferences and to the media because this can't happen, especially if he wants to keep his job after this season, which, by all looks of it, I don't think he's going to. And nor does he deserve it as well. And listen, John Idzik has not done a good job putting this team together. But you can't go into San Diego. You can't go anywhere and get shut out 31-0 and play horrible on offense, play horrible on defense, commit 12 penalties for 94 yards. It's just, it's unexceptional. I mean, it can't happen. It can't happen. And it doesn't get any easier for the Jets. Because next week, you know who they play. Play Peyton Manning. I mean, it's not like, come on, Peyton Manning. Who's Peyton Manning? Peyton Manning had his career high passing yards today, 472 yards, and he looks as sharp as ever. So, listen, next week, home against the Denver Broncos, I don't even want to see what the spread's going to be in that game. I think that the spread's going to be 10 and a half, around then. And it deserves to be that high because Denver right now is playing exceptional football. They're 3-1, and their one loss was a very winnable game in Seattle. They took the Seahawks to overtime. Ended up losing. They didn't get the ball at all. The Seahawks got the ball to start the overtime, and they scored in their first possession. But they're 3-1, and they were in that loss. So, look, the Broncos are rolling right now. The Jets are reeling right now. The season might be over before we even hit. Come on, if they lose next week 1-5, it's over. It's over. And it might be over right now because for all intents and purposes, they're 1-5. And if you want to say for all intents and purposes they're 1-6, go right ahead. Because after Denver, they play in New England on Thursday night in prime time. Not easy. The Jets knew coming into this season, the beginning of their schedule was going to be a disaster, and it has been so far. And listen, as I've said time and time again, I'm not a Jet fan, but I like to see the Jets win. I like to see New York teams do well. I hate the negativity. I want to see that the Jets be in the hunt at least. Come on, at least be 2-3, not 1-4. I want to see some excitement in the NFL. I want to see some excitement in New York sports with the New York sports teams. The Giants have it right now with 3 straight games. The Jets, this is absolute disaster. Let's take a look at the Sunday night game right now. 14-0 New England on top of Cincinnati. And I was getting mad at the media this entire week because everyone was saying New England's done. Tom Brady is not the same player he used to be. There's turmoil in that locker room with the coaching staff. Tom Brady is not happy. Well, tonight, I mean, Tom Brady is showing you that he's the Tom Brady of old. 9-for-13, 126 yards, 1 touchdown, passer rating of 125.8. He looks good. Don't count out the Patriots just yet, and please do not say that the AFC East is up for grabs. Do the New England Patriots own the NFC East anymore? I don't think that they own it as they did throughout this entire decade since 2001. They don't own it as much as they do, but it's still their division, and it's their division until they lose it. Yeah, Buffalo's 3-2. Buffalo had a great win today, by the way, in Detroit, and a great win for Jim Schwartz as well, who, as you may know, was the former head coach of the Detroit Lions and got fired at the end of last year because they faltered down the stretch. They lost that game against the Giants, and they ended up firing him. He went to Buffalo, became the defensive coordinator, and won in Detroit today, a big upset. So Buffalo goes to 3-2. Detroit's now at 3-2. And that's kind of the theme of this season, as I'm just saying, people are 3-2. There's a couple 2-3s. How about New Orleans 2-3? How about Atlanta 2-3? There's parity in the NFL for once. Not for once. There's always been parity in the NFL. But my point is there's really no dominant team in the NFL this year. I mean, Green Bay, yeah, they're 3-2. They've had some bad losses, man. That loss against Detroit was ugly. How about New Orleans as well? Almost losing at home to Tampa. I mean, come on. Very unacceptable. Losing at Cleveland? My point is, there's not a lot of dominant teams as there used to be. It's a very fun season in the NFL this year. I'm really enjoying it. Actually, the Jets, as I'm going back to the Jets right now, they were the first team to be shut out this season. So, not a stat that you want, but listen, stat that the Jets have to take. And, look, the Jets did get shut out today, okay? But I don't think that's the worst thing in the world for a team. Because, if I'm a team, I would almost rather lose 31-0 than be embarrassed than lose, let's say, 24-10. Let's say the score is 24-7, you get a late field goal, make it 24-10. No, you're not in the game, but in your mind you're thinking, oh, you know what, we could have won if we did this, this, or that. Losing 31-0, yeah, obviously you get shut out and it's embarrassing, but you know that you have to make a complete 180 turn in your strategy this week to next week. So, look, at least the Jets know. Basically, the Jets need to pull a George Costanza. That's what I'm saying. You got to do everything the opposite. Brian knows what I'm saying here. Pull a George Costanza. Whatever you think you're going to do, do the opposite. And who knows, maybe you'll win 31-0. Really, I mean, come on, Jets. 31-0. I mean, Geno Smith not doing good. Michael Vick coming in. Listen, the score was, what, 21-0 at half, and no Jet fan. I don't think any Jet fan thought that when Michael Vick was coming in that he was going to make a big turn in the game and, you know, win the game for the Jets. But he didn't look good as well. So, look, the Jets need a quarterback, and they might need a backup quarterback as well. Not fun. Chris Herring will join us in a couple of moments on Sports Talk 1240. He is the Knicks beat writer for the Wall Street Journal, and he'll be joining us out. And I was just saying, we're getting back to New York Knicks now. It's a big transition period for the Knicks. Triangle offense is coming in. Amari Stoudemire, it's the last year of his big contract. He's not getting paid $20 million next year as he has been this entire contract that He signed at the start of 2010. This is the last year of that contract, so yeah, it's the end. And listen, it might fire up Amari a little bit because Amari knows that this might be the last contract that he will be getting in the NBA. So he's in a contract here. In his mind, he knows that he's got to perform this year. Otherwise, he might not get that 1 year, $4 or $5 million deal. He might have to settle for a 1 year, $1 million deal from a team. So let's say, last year he did not have a bad year. 11.9 points per game. Rebounds per game, all right, not bad, 4.9. But he was a presence, and he was good. He gave the Knicks minutes off the bench. He was a body there. Averaged 12 points a game. So, listen, if he is going to have that season again, I'll take it. I'll sign up for last season any day of the week. But you never know about his knees. I'm going to ask Chris about Amari's health in a couple of seconds. And also, Amon Shumpert. He's in a contract year as well. He's been rumored in a lot of trades recently, this offseason, last season. He's always rumored in trades. So I'm curious how his confidence is doing as well, and I'm curious if this new triangle offense and this new system with this new coaching staff is going to help him on Shumpert, because last year he didn't have a good year. Yeah, his defensive presence was good, but there were times on offense where he just looked lost. I mean, he's good on D, but if he is going to be an offensive liability, I don't know if he's going to be worth re-signing to, let's say, a 3-year, $25, $30 million deal. I don't know if he's going to be able to do that, but now on the phone, we do have Chris Herring from the Wall Street Journal. Lucky enough to have him on board on Sports Talk 1240. Chris, Eric Getzoff here. Thank you for taking a couple minutes. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. So you're up at Knicks training camp. How do they look so far up there?
Well, you know, they don't really let the media into too much of the practices and the training camp, but honestly, you know, you can tell the tone is different. You know, just the focus is so much on the defensive end, which is nice to see after last year, and the energy seems to be a lot different. You know, last year they had to deal with the idea of Mike Woodson and his future kind of hanging over their heads and whether Carmelo is going to leave, and now there's just a new optimism, a new energy with the new coaching staff and the new regime.
The new triangle offense, it works, I think, as the personnel goes. With the Knicks roster, do you think that this triangle offense can work?
I mean, I'm sure it'll be okay. I don't think it's going to make them world beaters right off the bat. I think it will probably take them time to learn. And I think people are kind of selling that short, how long it takes to learn a new offense. It's really not that common in today's NBA, especially with Phil Jackson out of coaching for the last 4 or 5 years. So I think it'll probably take some time to catch on. And the other thing to keep in mind, that I think a lot of Knicks fans that are really happy with Phil coming in, what they're forgetting, their offense has not been their problem. I mean, you look at it the last 2 years. You go back 2 years ago, they were third in the league in offense. You go back last year, in a down year for a lot of those guys, they were 11th in the league in offense, and they were actually fourth in the league in offense, you know, once Andrea Bargnani went down, and they kind of went to their small lineup the majority of the time. So that wasn't their issue. I think, again, the defense is probably going to be the biggest issue for them. I think their offense will probably be fine a month or two into the season once they've got stuff down, but it's going to be more of a question of whether they can really stop opponents on the other end of the floor.
And you mentioned the other end of the floor on defense, and as a fan, I noticed that there was constant switching. Tyson Chandler even complained last year that Mike Woodson was not making changes in terms of the switching strategy. You think that we'll see the similar defensive schemes, or is Fisher's coaching staff going to preach fighting through picks and screens?
They're obviously going to make some real changes there. I think Mike Woodson, for better or worse, kind of had what he had in terms of the strategy and really was slow to want to move away from that. It was pretty unconventional in terms of what he did in terms of the switching. And on top of that, you know, one thing that didn't get quite as much attention as the switching did was the double teaming, especially in the post. And, you know, a lot of games you'd see the Knicks going to double a player like Robin Lopez pretty randomly, seemingly pretty random, players that weren't real scoring threats, but the Knicks would kind of throw double teams at them to try to catch them off guard and force them into a turnover. So I don't think you're going to see nearly as much of that. The biggest change in strategy that we've heard about so far from a couple of the players that Fisher wants to put in place is the idea of forcing the ball toward the sideline, which is a major difference from last year. The Knicks often would try to force the ball in toward the middle, which, you know, on the one hand seems smart because you're kind of setting everything up to go through Tyson Chandler, former defensive player of the year, and to kind of make him your anchor and to kind of force everything toward him. It's a similar system to what the Pacers run a lot of the time. But obviously the Knicks didn't have good enough perimeter defense to be able to slow those guys down as they came through the lane. And I think eventually Tyson Chandler kind of got tired of being the last line of defense and having guys running at him going 80 miles an hour. So you're going to see the strategy change a lot. You're going to see a lot more pick and roll forced towards the sideline and towards the baseline at sometimes instead of right down the middle of the floor.
In terms of the offense, how do you feel that the offense will be different with the triangle? Do you think that the offense is going to lead to a lot more ball movement and less stagnation and less time where Carmelo Anthony's just holding the ball?
Well, I mean, that's the hope for this offense. I'm not completely sold on that yet. I think it's probably asking a lot for Carmelo, who literally last year and then 2 years ago was the most stagnant player in the league in terms of someone who holds the ball the longest. You know, statistically, he isolated and went one-on-one more than any player in the league last year, and that was also the case a couple years ago. So I think it's asking a lot of him to change that overnight and to try to just be part of a system. I mean, the thing about the triangle is it allows for players to isolate, too. That's fine within the system to some extent, but it can't be every other play the way it was last year and the way it was 2 and 3 years ago. So it'll be a challenge for him, I'm sure, to kind of break some of those habits. And I think the biggest thing to watch, and I've written about this, and I think some other people have looked at this too, Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant were much, much younger than Carmelo is now in terms of when the triangle was introduced to them. I think Michael was 26, Kobe was 21, Carmelo's 30. So asking whether he can really fit that system is a valid question. He seems to want to do that, but you know, figuring out whether he can do it to where the offense really flows and gels the way that Phil and Derek Fisher want it to, I think that's something that we're going to have to watch closely for the first few months.
And wouldn't you think that Carmelo Anthony kind of would want this offensive system to come into place, considering that he's one of the biggest superstars in the NBA? He's only reached the conference finals once in his career. So from my opinion, I feel like if Carmelo Anthony, he should welcome this system considering how much success it's had in the past with superstars such as Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan.
Well, sure. I mean, the thing that I find interesting is that you listen to him and you pay close attention to what he's saying, and, you know, I've been there to hear how he's saying a lot of this stuff, and he seems to understand that this is not a championship team. I mean, they made some moves over the summer, obviously the trade with Chandler to get Calderon and Samuel down there. But I think most people understand this at best is probably like a 6 seed, maybe a 7 seed, or an 8 seed. And, you know, at worst, you find them back where they were last year, where they're on the outside looking into the playoff race. They're not a championship team. Yes, the Eastern Conference is balanced out a little bit, but, you know, it doesn't take a team that was out of the playoffs last year and make them a championship contender or an Eastern Conference finals contender or anything like that. So, you know, the roster is still pretty much the same in terms of the players that are going to have the biggest offensive impact. You throw in Calderon, that's the main difference. But you've still got J.R. Smith. You've still got Shumpert there. You know, you've still got Prigioni as one of the backup point guards. The offense is still the same for the most part. And so Carmelo's still going to have that weight on his shoulders. Yes, the ball will move around a little bit more. And, yeah, you've got a better point guard in terms of a shooter in Calderon. But, you know, the fact that they move the ball better is not going to make all the pressure just come off Carmelo's shoulders. And I think he understands there's still no ideal second scorer there. Stoudemire will be around, but whether he can stay healthy is a question. J.R. Smith will be around, but whether he can play consistently and do so unselfishly and you know, not slow the game down with his own one-on-one plays like Carmelo's are, I think it's all an open question as to how much this is going to take the weight off his shoulders. It is a good offense in theory to do that, but whether Carmelo really gives things a chance to work well enough to where, you know, the pressure is off his shoulders a little bit by moving the ball and by putting the onus on someone else to create scoring other than himself.
Chris Herring from the Wall Street Journal joins us at HerringWSJ on Twitter. Does a great job. Chris, the Knicks have a surplus of guards, in my opinion. Who do you think is the odd man out of the lineup, like the least minutes or the guy who might be traded?
Well, you know, that two-guard position, I think everybody has looked at for quite a while now and wondered how long can you really go with a three-deep shooting guard rotation between J.R. Smith, Amon Shumpert, and Tim Hardaway Jr. You know, I know I've written in the past that the Knicks would be smart to at least gauge Hardaway's trade value a little bit to see what's out there for him. And I also reported that they had kind of at least had some conversations with the Timberwolves before Kevin Love was traded. Obviously, there's no shot of that deal ever happening, but that the Knicks, you know, were at least trying to gauge what he might be worth. So the two-guard position is pretty deep. You only have one guy that consistently plays defense at that position, and Shumpert. But the point guard position, you know, is also sort of deep, but you have the same problem there that none of those guys are really known for defense. Shane Larkin probably has a little bit of potential on that end, but Prigioni is probably too slow point guard to really make an impact there in the half-court sets defensively. And the same is true of Calderon. He might be even worse than Felton was defensively. So you're really deep there. I think, honestly, the deepest position they might have, deep, you know, being a word that, you know, is open interpretation based on who the fan is, but obviously Carmelo has been fantastic at the four the last few years at power forward. And then you've also got Stoudemire, who you probably have to give minutes to, either for his trade value or just because of the value of his deal, at $20 million a year, and Bargnani, obviously, too, as a power forward. You've got three or four guys there, and that's not even counting Jason Smith, who could probably play at the four or the five as well. So you might have as many as four guys at power forward that all can use minutes there. They've got a deep team. It's just that the problem with the Knicks, in my opinion, is that you've got too many guys that all have the same strengths. Everybody is a scorer, and you really don't have any guys that can defend. You've got pretty much one guy at every position that can defend, and I just don't think that's enough. That's why I'm not sold on them as a surefire playoff team just yet.
Yeah, I agree. I think J.R. Smith and Tim Hardaway Jr. are too similar. I think that, I mean, Bargnani, Amari, I mean, they're both offensive guys, not really defensive guys. So, yeah, I 100% agree with you. And that brings me to my next question, which is starting center. Are we going to see Bargnani starting center, Dallenberg, possibly Jason Smith? Do the Knicks have an idea of who the starting center is going to be, or that's going to be decided in training camp?
If I had to put money on it, I would say that Dallenberg will probably be the guy. I just think that over the course of his career, that's kind of where he's been. He's always been a starting center for the most part. And based on his reputation, that's what I would expect. You also saw him in a practice yesterday starting at the five, kind of with that first group. And that was kind of our first look at things. So I would expect that. That said, I'm not sure I love it. You know, I honestly think, and it'll sound a little bit crazy, I think Cole Aldridge could actually be a good, he's probably the least likely guy to start there. But I really like the way he defends. His effort is always there. He can put together some stops on that end of the floor. And he's also an elite rebounder, too. He can do a little bit out of the pick and roll. He's not a big scorer, but really when you think about it, if you're going to, depending on who you start, I don't think you're going to need a ton of scoring in that starting lineup. You're going to have Carmelo there. Calderon is a much better shooter than Felton was. And you can go a couple different ways at the two. If you have J.R. Smith there, it probably lessens the need to have a scorer at center or a power forward. You're probably going to have Carmelo starting at the three. But I really like Aldridge, but I don't think that Aldridge is going to start there. I think he's probably more likely their second or third string center. And I think Dallenberg, just based on reputation alone, will probably get the nod at center under Derek Fisher.
Chris, I've posted a question on Twitter. One of my good friends answered. He wanted to know. He's a diehard Knicks fan. I mean, the Knicks. He thinks that the Knicks are going to get back to relevancy soon. I do too, and I hope that the Knicks are. But do you think that the Knicks would rush to get Melo the second scorer or All-Star this year, or do you think that they would prefer to wait until free agency next season?
I think most things are geared toward free agency. I think if anything, they probably would have tried to go ahead and get the second scorer this summer, which is what I was saying before about Kevin Love, and at least gauging, you know, trying to reach out to Minnesota to see if it even made sense to really engage in a serious discussion about anyone on their roster to make a play for Kevin Love, because they knew that Kevin Love wanted out, and that was part of the reason they engaged in those conversations with them, was to try to get a sense of whether or not they could make something happen before Kevin Love was traded away to another team and, you know, wouldn't hit free agency. Because all of a sudden now, for a while, you looked up, you thought maybe Carmelo, LeBron, Kevin Love, and then you throw in Rondo, Aldridge, Dragic, you're going to have quite a class of guys next year. That was the thinking before we got to this past summer. And then the summer came around and most of those guys opted out. Kevin Love was on the trade market and then signed an extension before he could even get to 2015. So all of a sudden, most of those guys are off the table. Now, instead of looking at the premier guys that we thought before, at best now you're going to have maybe Aldridge, Rondo, Dragic. Mark Gasol is probably the one that makes the most sense for the Knicks. And, you know, I really don't see a whole lot of scorers in that market. You've got like a Roy Hibbert in that class as well. So I just don't think the scorer is going to be there. And I think that's part of the reason the Knicks were trying to at least talk to teams and see if they had the necessary pieces to make something happen this summer. And the problem was they didn't have any assets to deal. They didn't have, you know, a first rounder that they had sent away in the Bargnani trade. They obviously had a first rounder that they had sent away from Melo, Denver, and so they really just didn't have anything to make it happen. Come next summer, most of those guys that are going to be available next summer are not really scorers. They're more guys that facilitate like a Rondo, or they rebound and they pass the ball well like Gasol. They defend well. So I don't think that second score is going
to be there. Chris, unfortunately, we're going to have to go. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time, though.
Not a problem.
All right. Thank you very much. Follow Chris Herring, Wall Street Journal, on Twitter. Yeah, great job as always, Chris Herring, Chris the Ackert. Sports Talk 1240, Eric Getzoff here. Talk to you soon. Have a great rest of your night.